I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
John, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
We are wearing Pope shirts today to celebrate the miracle on 35th Street, the White Sox winning a series over the Giants. I don't think anyone saw it coming.
Yeah, I mean, they're better than they were. No question about that. I like some of the kids. Taylor looks good. The catcher, he's hitting up, doing well. So I'm feeling better about them than I have been a long, long time.
Wow.
Oh, look at
that. That's great, John. Well, you know what? Molly sprung for T-shirts with the Pope on the front. Maybe we should send you one.
Absolutely. I love the Pope. Right from Dalton, Illinois, right?
Yes.
My college roommate.
Yes.
Right? Awesome.
Sox fan.
Yes, and they are playing inspired baseball lately because of who? Maybe there's a connection.
7-13 in their last 20. That's like
listen, that includes the 8-game losing streak. What they are doing better, John, is that they're pitching better. They're doing the little things better, and I think people wonder now as far as what's next for Colson Montgomery. I know it's not a big story around the league, but the question is, he was their top prospect at one time, one of the best top in baseball, and he's on a hot streak. What's the philosophy right now in Major League Baseball with prospects like that? Bring them up and see what you got, or wait and be patient?
Well, it depends what team you have. I mean, the Angels bring guys up almost as soon as they're drafted. So, you know, that's the team that does. There are other teams that are more cautious. He obviously is very hot right now. You know, he started out terribly. I think he went on that hiatus or a spa, whatever you guys called that, in 149 at the time. And now he's up. He's still below 250, though. So
yeah.
I'm not going to be outraged if they don't call him up. I mean, you know, you're in the minors and you're below 250. You know, I mean, I know he's lately been very, very good. But I think I'd give it a little more time. But I'm kind of with you guys that it's getting close. I mean, if he keeps this going for another couple weeks, I'm right with you and say call him up.
So help us out, John. The Mets, of all teams, they got crushed by the Pirates. Was it 30-4 over the course of that series? That, I mean, you're not supposed to do that. That's not supposed to happen. You don't pay that kind of money for a baseball team and see that go awry.
I mean, you know, I think their pitching was it was overachieving by quite a bit. They led the league in starting pitching ERA and overall ERA, and that's without Manaea, who could be their best pitcher, along with Senga. I mean, they've had pitching injuries. Senga, McGill out now. You've got Canning now out for the year. So, but even still, you should not lose 30-4 to the Pirates. The Pirates were the worst offense in the league going into that series. The Mets were the best pitching staff in the league going to that series. I mean, it's shocking. I mean, you'd like to think if you're from the New York side that it's an aberration, but it's almost a trend. They lost 9 of 10 fairly recently as well. So, you know, things are not looking great right now for the Mets. Their pitching is clearly at a deficit and certainly not trending in the right direction.
John, I think you look at the Cubs coming home from Houston after losing that series in the way that they did. And today's the last day in June. They're off, and they're 13-13 this month. They're 500, which you look at it, okay, acceptable maybe based on their start, but every team in the division was better than that. What do you make of the Cubs and what's happened to them, and how would you feel if you're watching them on a daily basis?
Yeah, I still feel pretty good about the Cubs. I mean, a little bit of regression. They were overachieving in terms of the offense. I don't think there's any question about that. They don't have the best offense in baseball. It's very good. Very good offense. But I do think they were overachieving. I'm a little worried about Pete Crow Armstrong. Are they figuring out a little bit? He may have to make an adjustment. We'll see. But, I mean, right now he's still one of the top MVP candidates. So, I mean, you can't knock him. But, He does chase a little bit. I like their team. They should win that division. St. Louis, to me, at this point, I think it's shocking. I think that at best a 500 team, but I could be, you know, they're proving me wrong. Milwaukee, they're dangerous. I mean, every year they overachieve, and now they have this kid up, the Miz, and he looks like a number one starter. I mean, hearing from Milwaukee people, he needs refinement, but I mean, he's been as dominant as anybody but Scooble in the last 2 weeks, and I am a little concerned for the first time about Milwaukee. They're amazing the way they do it every year. That would not be good to lose out to Milwaukee again.
Yeah, how does the trade stuff look to you? Are you hearing anything? You know, we had heard that maybe like a week ago, 10 days ago, that the Cubs were ready to make a move, and then it came out Mitch Keller could be the guy. I just wonder if that's a big enough move, and when would they make that kind of move?
Right. Well, I mean, it couldn't be traded up until yesterday because they just had the Mitch Keller jersey giveaway day yesterday. So maybe it's today or tomorrow, right? I mean, you can't trade him when you're giving away his jersey. So, you know, maybe that's a possibility. There's nobody great out there. There's no Stavior on the way. Skeens is not getting traded. Sale not getting traded. Now hurt, but not getting traded. I mean, you know, we keep talking about Alcantara. He's got a 7 ERA. So, you know, I mean, I saw one periodical or whatever we call that, one website say, oh, trade Cade Horton, Ballesteros, and two other top at four prospects who the good fans have heard of, and certainly Cade Horton is performing pretty well at the major league level. Trade him for Alcantara. Alcantara has a 6.98 ERA. I'm not trading for him under any circumstances, certainly not giving up Cade Horton for him. So I don't know that there's a savior out there. I would rather, I think at this moment, I'd rather have Keller than Alcantara, but there's no number one pitcher. So I mean, they got a good team. You've got Shota back now. They're in a good situation, not great like they were, but I think they're in a pretty good position.
Well, I'll push back a little bit, John. I think what you're referencing in that Hall and proposed trade idea for Alcantara was ridiculous because it was absurd as how much prospect capital they were willing to give up. But I would think that when you look around the league and who's available and who the Cubs maybe could attain, Sandy Alcantara is a former Cy Young Award winner who had a good stretch earlier this year. Now, yeah, he gave up 7 runs on Saturday, and that maybe did nothing but drop his price, perhaps. But if I'm the Cubs, he still looks better to me than some of the other names, Severino, Mitch Keller, some other guys who were out there.
Adrian Hauser.
I still think that Alcantara is a guy that...
I'll take Adrian Hauser.
Oh, wow. Really?
He's throwing 97. He's got an ERA. I think it's probably under 2.
Yes.
I mean, we've got to get the hot pitcher. We have a half a season to go. He has ticked up. His velocity is much better than it had been.
You go,
you're not going to have to give up a ton to get him.
Yes.
I don't know. When I saw that, I know that was just a website that didn't know what it was talking about. But
right.
When I saw that, I'm like, oh, my God, this is, you know, I don't think that's true because you don't have to give up even Horton for Alcantara at
John,
this point.
You're really bucking for the Pope t-shirt suggesting
yes.
that to Mully.
We're sending you one, John.
I love the Pope t-shirt. Yeah, that people like to see a Jew in a Pope t-shirt. I think that would be a big positive.
It's a baseball shirt.
It's a baseball shirt.
Okay, good. Yeah. I'll take it. I said I want it.
So I think that's an interesting thing about the pitching dilemma. I am curious when you look at the trade market. We've got about a month to go, but are the Cubs going to have to look for a third baseman? Do you think that the Matt Shaw regression relative to – it's not as bad as it was before he was sent down, but it's not been great lately. Do you think – have you heard – are they looking for a third baseman?
I mean, I heard there were scouts looking at Hayes. I don't know. He Brian Hayes with the Pirates, and he had a hot series. I think he was something like 7-for-13 against the Mets. Of course, everybody hit against the Mets, but overall, his OPS is still around 600. So I'm not seeing that a trade for him at this moment is the right move. He's also got years to go, and I still believe Shaw is their third baseman of the future. So I'm not seeing that. I don't see, and again, Arenado, same thing. He's around 700, not much better with the OPS. And I don't think the Cardinals are dealing him to the Cubs. The Cardinals are in the race, and he's expensive. I mean, I do think it's pitching. I think it's starting pitching, and I think it's bullpen for the Cubs more than anything. I don't know that there is a great third baseman on the horizon. There are, like, change of scenery type guys like Renhifo or, I don't know, maybe Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, but nothing that's going to wow you. I mean, I think it's the same thing with the rotation, though, at this point. I mean, you could compare them to each other and say, well, this guy, you know, Alcantara is better than Keller or Keller is better than whoever. The fact is, none of these guys is the number one starter right now, and I'm not sure any of them is the number two starter. So I'm not giving up Cade Horton or any top prospects unless I get a guy who I think is really going to impact the race, and I'm not sure any of these guys are going to do that.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
John, you know, we talked a little bit. Horton had a bad outing. It was his first really bad outing of the year, and he gave up seven runs, and he got knocked around pretty good. But that's kind of young pitchers, right? Isn't that kind of supposed to be the way things go, where as you pitch, you get tired, your arm gets sore? I mean, who knows what is going on behind the scenes? But that's almost like, it's rare that you come up and you're just like an ace. Now, I know we're seeing a little bit of it, but he had one little setback. I would tap the brakes on a lot of fear about him moving forward, but I'd also be aware that young guys haven't pitched this many innings before, and you got to be aware of it. And we've seen it all over baseball where you start cutting back on the amount of innings guys pitch.
Yeah, I mean, once a year we see a guy come up like Mizorowski and throw two no-hit games. Obviously, nobody throws nine innings anymore. One was five innings, one was six innings. I mean, Mizorowski looks like a dominant guy who's going to be a number one starter. Cade Horton, I think, is going to be a very good major league starter. I don't know that he's going to be a number one starter, but he's still, I mean, even a number two starter is extremely valuable, and I'm not trading him for anything that's out there. I mean, if Skeens was out there, sure, I'd throw him in there and 10 other guys. If Sale was out there, I would give up Horton for Sale,
right.
If he was healthy. But these other guys who are number three starters, I mean, I think Horton is going to be a number two starter, and you've got him under control for another 5.5 years. So to me, it makes no sense. There's nobody out there I'm trading him for, and I still believe that he's going to be, I mean, I'm not even counting the one start. I didn't see him as a, you know, the guy who came up and was like Mizorowski, or when he came up, Harvey, or, you know, when he came up, you know, Seaver. You know, I'm using New York guys, but yeah. I didn't see him as that guy. But there's nothing wrong with being a number two starter. In fact, it's quite valuable. There is no number two starter out on the market right now. Alcantara is a nice name. He was a Cy Young winner. He's off the Tommy John. He's got probably the worst ERA of any qualifier in Major League Baseball. I'm not trading for him.
Got to ask you this on the heels of last night. Speaking of pitching, the Tigers somehow are the best team in the American League, and it's a big reason why is because Tarek Skubal last night was just dominant, and it was great that he had a national audience so people could appreciate just how special he is in Detroit, because I think a lot of people may know about him who cover baseball, but the casual fan, like, wow, who is that guy and how impactful he has been?
I mean, he is by far the best pitcher in baseball. The AL Cy Young race is very, right now, close. He's the overwhelming favorite because he's the best pitcher, and he won last year, and he has the best stuff, and he's has the most dominant games. But if you look at the stats, I mean, Crochet is right up there with him. Hunter Brown is right up there. DeGrom right up there with him, and so is Max Fried. So it is a great five-man race. But as far as who's the best pitcher in baseball, nobody should hesitate. The guy, Tarek Skubal, is unreal. Ninth-round draft choice. Somehow he got $500,000 as a ninth-round pick. Not sure how he did it. At the University of Seattle, good negotiating even at that point. But he's worth, I don't know if he's worth $500 million, but he's worth several hundred million at this point. He is clearly the number one pitcher in baseball, even above Skeens.
That's amazing. And I agree with you. I think he's spectacular. And you know, he's also like a horse of a man, right? I mean, you don't really worry about him kind of breaking down because he's so damn big.
Yeah, and he's a left-hander throwing 100 miles an hour. I think he finished off a game in the ninth inning with 102 miles an hour. I mean, left-handers generally throw, you know, 1 to 2 miles an hour slower on average than right-handers. A left-hander throwing 100 miles an hour, starter in the game, and hits 102 in the ninth inning. I mean, you know, he looks like he's on a path to be an all-time great. And he's a great young man. We had him on our podcast. He's fantastic. You know, and there were rumors last year that they might trade him. I mean, crazy. That's not happening. That said, they've had some talks, and they are way, way, way apart from what I understand in the talks. Not even close. Hmm. I mean, he needs to be at least in the Gerrit Cole $300 million plus category, and maybe even more.
It's a lot for a pitcher. So, John, help educate our audience, because I think that James Wood might be the best player nobody's heard of. And over the last 162 games, you look at his numbers, and he has been outstanding. Got walked intentionally 4 times. And just who is he, and how impactful and how good can he be?
Yeah, I mean, he was in that draft a few years ago with the Padres where there basically were like 4 good players. And they picked in the first round, they picked Jackson Merrill, number 25. In the second round, they picked James Wood. I mean, talk about scouting. That was the worst draft in probably the last 50 years. And they got 2 superstars in the first 2 rounds. Now they traded him because the Padres were willing to gamble. They traded him for Soto in that big deal. I mean, the Nats would be without him and Abrams and Gore, plus the other 2 guys they got in that Soto deal, they'd be the Rockies. I mean, he is outstanding. 4 intentional walks. I mean, I think that matched his career total previously or beat it. I mean, the guy is terrific. I saw a stat where over his first 162 games, it's almost identical to Bryce Harper. Now, of course, Bryce Harper was 19 years old at that point, but still, to have a 930 OPS, he's got to be an all-star. He is outstanding, really good. They have a few great, great players to build around, but they don't have the pitching. You know, they're kind of, if you combine them and the White Sox, I think you have a whole excellent team. But unfortunately, you can't do that.
I'm curious how you feel about the idea that everyone gets an all-star. I got to be honest with you. I'm a Sox fan. I've watched the team all year. They don't have an all-star on that roster. And if they end up with one, it's someone that will not be an all-star probably again. Does that matter? Is it okay just because you want someone wearing a uniform? It just seems like they ought to make an exception to that rule. If a team isn't performing at a certain level, then why pretend like they have an all-star?
I'm with you. Under the current rules, where there are guys who are excellent players getting excluded, last year was Lindor, right, who ended up second in MVP, was excluded because you needed an all-star from every team. Right, if you're the Rockies and you're on your way to 30 wins, you don't deserve an all-star. The White Sox, I saw their MVP for the first half, at least noted by MLB.com, was Vargas. I mean, he's been an average, you know, I mean, it's been better, but I mean, what's his OPS? It's like 720, right? That's close to 100 average, right? So, you know, I don't see an all-star in that team. I'm with you under the current rules where they have a certain number of guys for each position and the certain number of total. Yes, I'm with you. To exclude guys who are MVP candidates, so you can include a guy who's average, I think it's ridiculous.
Before we let you go, John, quickly, when you look at Kyle Tucker's return to Houston, they gave him a nice video tribute. He had 4 hits on Saturday. Certainly, the conversation now has kind of been rekindled or revisited. It's been ongoing, but do you think he is a guy that will be staying with the Cubs? Is it too early to tell? Or how should we view the Kyle Tucker situation?
Well, I mean, I think players love being in Chicago. If they are close, you know, I don't know that he's going to go for every last dollar. They should be able to do it. They have not stepped out and, you know, signed one of the biggest 10 deals to this point. Their biggest deals are Hayward and Swanson, both under $200 million. This one obviously will not be under $200 million. It's going to be certainly over $300 million. I certainly think as a big market team where he's thriving and he likes it very much, at least that's what he said, and I believe it, They should do it. That said, there's going to be competition. You saw that the Giants are so desperate, they took a DH, a malcontented DH, with a $313 million contract and gave up four players to get him. $313 million. Devers is not as good a player as Kyle Tucker. And as a free agent, you don't have to give up four players for him. So there could be somebody out there. Could it be the Giants, Dodgers? Could be the Red Sox. I mean, there are teams out there that are going to go above and beyond what you think. And sometimes you have to do things that you think are illogical. But he is a very good and consistent. I mean, look at his record. It's the same thing every year. And he's good all around. He's a very good defensive player. Is he Pete Pro Armstrong? Is he going to have a 3 or 4 war as a defensive player? No, not as a right fielder. But he's a very good right fielder. And they need to get it done.
Great stuff, John. Let us know what size you want and when you're going to be in Chicago. We'll have it waiting for you.
Thanks, John.
All right. XL. All right.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you. That's our guy, John Heyman. That's great stuff.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.